Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission. Here with episode 184 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling, No Matter the Age, There Are No Free Rides in Farming. About a conversation I had with Andy Juris, a wheat farmer in the Horse Heaven Hills of Washington, Secretary-Treasurer of the Washington Association of Wheat Growers, and a former pilot with American Airlines. I had initially reached out to farmers on the younger end of the wheat-growing spectrum to do a podcast about the impact of COVID-19 on their lives, families, and operations. But as days wore on without me pursuing the topic, when Juris and I finally did speak, via computer of course, our conversation was more wide-ranging. If there was a theme, I think it was exploring what it's like to be below average, as in below the average age of wheat farmers in the state. According to the 2017 Census of Agriculture, wheat farmers in Washington clock in at an average of 58 years. Juris is 40. Ahead, we talk about glyphosate, the herbicide best known as Roundup. For those not up to speed on glyphosate's history in the Pacific Northwest, a quick primer. Glyphosate has been a transformative chemical that in many cases has allowed farmers to hang up their tillage equipment and the multiple trips across fields once needed to kill moisture-robbing and pathogen-carrying weeds. Erosion has dramatically declined as a result. Although the EPA says glyphosate is not cancer-causing, Bayer, the company which purchased Monsanto and Roundup for $63 billion in 2018, just settled thousands of lawsuits for $10 billion, all of them arguing that it is cancer-causing. Around $1 billion of the settlement is going to fund a research panel to determine once and for all if glyphosate is cancer-causing, and if so, what's the minimum exposure level that is dangerous. All of this is happening at the same time Pacific Northwest weeds are showing resistance to glyphosate. Higher rates of glyphosate are required, and even then, not all weeds are killed. Before we got to the topic of glyphosate, however, I asked Juris a much more basic question. Is a 40-year-old who has been raised on much of the technology that is at the heart of farming today at an advantage over the 58-year-old farmer, or does the 58-year-old, given his years more experience, hold the edge?
I see it kind of both ways. I think that as younger people, we grew up in a more technological age, certain things definitely make more sense to us when it comes to maybe being a little more patient with a computer or trying to figure out some of the more sophisticated software mapping systems or anything like that. On the other hand, I've seen plenty of older individuals who are interested in technology, and they seem to be able to take to it just fine. I was sitting at a farm conference here probably about 5 years ago with a gentleman from Illinois who was sitting there on his phone. He was, I think he was in his late 70s, and he was transferring grain from one bin to another in his grain terminal using his phone. So he seemed pretty comfortable with the technology. I think us younger guys maybe have a little bit more of an edge on the tech just by the nature of how things go generationally. But I also think that the older guys, they've seen a little bit more. So maybe we can get hung up on the tech a little bit. But when it comes to actually in the dirt, they've got that experience that they can apply to it. So I think that's an advantage for them.
Okay, well, let me ask you this question. What sort of technology do you use that your father doesn't?
I guess when it comes to it, our air seeder is a fairly complex air seeder, and it's got multiple computer systems on it, so I currently am the only one that drives it. Dad kind of backed away from that when we moved to some more sophisticated systems, and he's happy to do that because it just drives him insane when it's popping up a message or a window. And both of us use our smartphones. I do use mine a little bit more with some of our field mapping software. Dad likes the information, looking over the map. So as far as like manipulating them or anything like that, I usually do that.
So I do want to ask you a question about glyphosate. It's become so important in agriculture. Now, I had a farmer tell me, this was an older farmer, of course, tell me that his child wouldn't know how to farm without glyphosate. What about you?
I guess I'm old enough that I remember the pre Roundup days, or at least the days where Roundup was very expensive and only used in moderation or very little as an aid to tillage. We were full tillage. I grew up driving rod weeders all summer. And but yeah, it's kind of as glyphosate becomes more of a discussion in the public arena, and there's risks of losing it. I think it is potentially a problem. We have a generation of farmers that grew up in the no-till era where we were heavily reliant on it. I also think that aside from legal issues, we may have to figure out additional strategies where we see increasing incidents in the Pacific Northwest of glyphosate-resistant weeds.
Yes, yes, indeed. So what is the average precipitation on your farm, and how would you describe your farming practice?
We're fairly dry. We're at the western end of the Horsehaven Hills. So we're spread out over an area that ranges from about a 6-inch annual precipitation up to about a 10-inch annual precipitation. In a normal year, this year is probably about 20% of normal on precipitation. You know, for years have been primarily wheat. In about the last decade or so, it's kind of a desperation to diversify a little bit, have moved into hay. We grow a lot of grain hay, triticale and barley, and some alfalfa on the wetter ground, although in a year like this, you don't grow much alfalfa. So that's with wheat still being our primary crop.
Mm-hmm. Now, with an air seeder, does that mean that you're direct seeding?
Yes, we have been direct seeding since, I think, 1996 is when we started direct seeding. And recently have been, still use the air seeder, but have had to do some minimal tillage due to glyphosate-resistant weeds.
Now, is it just me, or do we seem to be having heavier spring rains? And has that raised the possibility of you changing your operations or rotations?
Possibly. You know, I mean, this year, obviously, we didn't really have any spring rain up until about May. And then we had a pretty good soaker that came through. In fact, we had some washes, which we're not used to seeing in the spring at all. There's some issues with that, and we look to alternate. Of course, with the hay, we look to some alternative crops. We have a small test of sorghum Sudan grass, which is a very unusual crop for this area, but with the goal of, if it works, to dry bale that for hay. So we are slowly kind of, each year is kind of a flex as best we can with what Mother Nature gives us.
Now, I've had older farmers tell me that they make more money sitting at the computer than sitting in their tractor, the idea being that there are government programs which can help them meet their P&L. Do you make a point of ensuring that you have utilized every government tool?
I make a point of investigating them. A long time ago, my grandfather told me, do you want to farm the soil or the government? And not that he was necessarily opposed to some of these programs. He just often felt, and especially in our dry climate, that some of these programs aren't necessarily tailored to creating the best agronomic practices for our conditions. And so I closely monitor the programs. We have participated in several, CSP and a few others, but we tend to be a little bit cautious, as sometimes we find that the restrictive nature of some of these EQIP contracts and CSP for that matter can probably inappropriately, unintentionally I think, but inappropriately drive agronomy in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you grow up on the farm? Can you trace your journey for me?
Yeah, I grew up on the farm, and, you know, grew up like just about every other farm kid did, driving vehicles before I could see easily over the dash, sitting on phone books and whatnot, and driving truck in the field and tractor.
I love those stories.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to have to duck below the dash in order to get the clutch all the way down, you know, to shift to the next gear. So, yeah, neighbors passing me would sometimes wonder if anyone was driving. So, so when I was in high school, my dad told me he did not want me to immediately start farming, or he did not want me to go to college and immediately return home to farm. He wanted me to go do something else. He said farming was something, when you have a family farm, it's easy to get into, but difficult to get out of sometimes. He wanted me to go make sure I really wanted to do it. I had a neighbor who was a private pilot at the time and had gotten me involved in learning how to fly, and I'd gotten my private pilot's license in high school. And so I then left the home after high school and attended the University of North Dakota and obtained a degree in aeronautical science there. And then for a few years actually taught in the aeronautics department there at the University of North Dakota. And then later I was a pilot for American Airlines for about 10 years. Then returning home to farm at about 2008.
I'm amazed at how many farmers are pilots. It just blows me away.
Yeah, there seems to be quite a few, you know, of us out there with maybe a little airplane, Piper Cub or something tucked in the barn that occasionally get out and check crops with. So, yeah, it. Like I said, it was a neighbor of mine. He's still around. He's elderly now, but yeah, kind of got heard that I was interested in model airplanes and decided to take me for a fly one day. So it was fun.
Nice, nice. And you're married and have children?
Yeah, we. My wife and I live just a few miles away. We're just outside of Bickleton, and we have one daughter.
All right, all right. When did you know that you wanted to be a farmer? Was it something that you knew from that age that you were sitting on phone books, or was it something that you knew after several years teaching school?
Seems like farm kids either can never quite get it out of their system, or they can't get away from the farm fast enough. It's just kind of one of the other. And I always never disliked farming. After I left, I was still interested in it, and I would check in often, and I tried to get off in the summer to come home and help with harvest and a few things like that. But my intention was to remain an airline pilot and stay there. But having gone through several economic upheavals, I was, of course, flying during the 2001 issues and the industry fallout from after the Twin Towers. And then also then in about 2008, when the economy really started to have some trouble, a lot of us had been furloughed and rehired several times, and I just really did not want to go through that. That was kind of the kicker where I decided that, well, you know, maybe now it's time to come home and give a try at farming. So we came back in about 2008, and I've better or worse been here ever since.
All right, now you bring up the year 2008, and certainly that was a period of time, 2008 to around 2013, when wheat was on a tear. Did those prices motivate you, and did you think that they were the new normal?
Yeah, I don't know if the prices motivated me a whole lot. I think it was more the general economic conditions I was looking at in another industry. But, you know, I think it's amazing to me how us as farmers or just human beings can adjust to what a new normal is. And I definitely think that I had forgotten what it was like in the 90s, where we saw just a lot of, I remember $2.70 wheat, you know, and I kind of thought, well, you know, I mean, things have come up and changed, and, you know, maybe we could see, you know, minimum $8 wheat, you know, for quite a while now. And so it wasn't a motivating factor for me to return to farm, but it was definitely something I think that probably everybody who's been through in agriculture has been through a time of higher prices. You kind of look back on and say, well, I appreciated it, but I'm not sure I appreciated it as much as I should have.
And what has it been like to live with the reality of sub $5 a bushel wheat?
It's definitely made you question a lot of what you considered important, and also made you question what your definition of a good year is. In our dry area, a good year is just getting to the next one. It's not really where you're planning to do a whole lot of crazy things on the farm. When you adjust your farming practices, you do so very carefully. We've had some fairly dramatic examples in the area of farmers that decided they were going to make a drastic change in terms of going all organic or something. And how that coupled with these low prices could really cause some pain. So it's definitely the reality of this is just that you have to be a great deal more cautious, a great deal more careful, and you have to analyze every decision in terms of return on investment.
Right, right. How does your spouse contribute to the farm and family, Andy?
My wife she was involved in banking for many years, worked in the corporate office for U.S. Bank for a long time, and then she quit that here several years ago, and now works for an online company, and but doesn't generally come out with. I mean, she comes out with us in the field, but doesn't work as a farm employee. She's a homemaker and works for this online company.
All right, all right. Do you raise your children differently from the way you were raised?
I would say probably not generally. I think whether we want to or not, we more or less become our parents in one way or another, for better or worse. And so our daughter has spent a lot of years out with us in the field, driving the grain wagons and stuff like that. And she's 22 now and on to other things. But it does have that background in farming that she can look back on, I think. I don't think it's something she will be interested in as a future for herself, but she always seemed to enjoy being outside, getting lots of sun, you know, that, like, fresh air, that kind of thing.
Okay, so your daughter is old enough that she's taken care of herself through this whole COVID-19 and the restrictions, including children out of school, etc. But how has the pandemic changed your farming operation, and has it changed your family operation?
I guess in a weird sense, on the farm, just I would say socially, it doesn't really seem like a whole lot's changed. Farmers tend to be somewhat solitary by the nature of our jobs, and those few of us here, you know, we have myself and my dad and one full-time employee, and just one or two seasonal summer employees, depending on harvest. In terms of that, nothing really seemed to change. We have noticed delays in chemical inputs, delivery parts, that sort of thing. You have to think a week or two ahead, if at all possible. At home, it's been more of a probably like a lot of people. We utilize, you know, we get our groceries from a town about an hour away, and we utilize their curbside pickup and a few things like that. My wife is an immunocompromised person, so she has to be a little extra careful dealing with that. And of course, you tend not to see your friends as much as you used to, and all of that kind of thing. We're very close to the Yakima County and the Yakima Valley, which is currently a pretty big hotspot for the virus. So we're a little more careful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I heard you mention that your father is still involved with the farm. What do you most admire about your father?
He is a very, very innovative person. I think that probably, I don't know, maybe it's just my nature, but one of the things I liked about aviation was it's a very structured and regimented industry. You do everything by procedure, and just my personality likes that. And I, by nature, then tend to just gravitate towards, okay, hand me the book and hand me the procedure and let's go get it done. In farming, you have to have a fair amount of flexibility. And my dad is the one that looks at new, you know, procedures, new techniques, new crops, that kind of thing, and wonders if maybe we should try this or try that. Or he's also very good at some of the engineering aspects of farming, where we do a lot of our own heavy maintenance. And so a lot of the messes that you end up getting into, how are you going to get a part out or anything like that, he's really good at that. So I always have really been impressed and admired with that. And also just the overall ability to stay calm in a bad year. You know, he's seen a lot of them. My grandpa, the same thing. My grandpa's still alive. He's 92, no longer actively farming, of course. But it helps when you have people with a wealth of experience like that around you. When things are tough, they can draw on the past and you know, give you encouragement for the future.
Absolutely, absolutely. Stay calm. Stay calm.
Yep.
So you've had these various careers. You taught at school. You've been an airline pilot. You, of course, farm now. In your life, what's the most important lesson you've learned?
I would say probably is that there are no free rides. In farming, especially, I think maybe it's subconsciously. It's something I notice in myself, and I've seen around a lot as well, is that we're always looking for that crop or that year or that technique that pays you $1 million and only costs $1. And Mother Nature just does not work that way. And it's the spending tons of money does not guarantee you a good crop, nor does spending almost no money. She requires an investment in what you're doing in order to see a result. And then that result's not always guaranteed. There's just no free rides. And so it's a very careful and cautious approach. And that goes for whether you are in a 10-inch rainfall zone or you're in a 40-inch rainfall zone.
When I first became involved in agriculture back in 1986, I was attracted to the farming innovators because, after all, newspaper reporters have new in their name. I, too, was attracted to the next big thing. I even once put money into the development of an alternative crop. Well, that didn't work out. Farming is a conservative industry because, just as Juris said, there are no free rides. Only a careful and cautious approach is likely to succeed over the long haul. In that respect, I don't see much, if any, difference at all between the attitude of a successful 40-year-old farmer and his 58-year-old counterpart. I hope you enjoyed episode 184, or what I called, No Matter the Age, There Are No Free Rides in Farming, about my conversation with Andy Juris, a Klickitat County farmer currently serving as Secretary Treasurer of the Washington Association of Wheat Growers. Please join me here again next week when I'll interview another farmer who is also younger than the average bear. Right here on Wheat All About It.
We love the land. The farm's our career. But make no mistake, we do not steer. Mother Nature's in the driver's seat. I'm talking life, and I'm talking wheat. We're riding shotgun, and we have our say. But Mrs. N, she points the way. We feed you.